Hello, everybody. This is Lisa Robin Young of BusinessActionHero.com, and I am just thrilled to be introducing today's guest to you. What would you do if you knew you couldn't lose? What would you dare if you were guaranteed unconditional success? And what would you dare to have if there were absolutely no limits? That's the opening from one of the many best-selling books of today's guest. If ever there was a model of the hero's journey for entrepreneurs, this guy is it. Dr. Joe Vitale's story of overcoming some pretty tough circumstances to achieve today's level of success with a collection of exquisite cars, including Steven Tyler's Roadster, unique instruments, including the rare Gibson Harp guitar, which he plays beautifully. Joe's a modern-day Renaissance man, reinventing himself from homeless to marketer to musician and beyond. And you may remember his appearance in the wildly popular The Secret. Today, we're going to explore some of the eye-opening events along Joe's journey that led him to this point in his career. So grab your pencils, your notebooks, a cool drink of water, and join me in welcoming Dr. Joe Vitale to the program. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. What a nice introduction. You were saying that, and I thought, that sounds beautiful. Then I didn't realize it was from one of my books.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a quasi-stalker fan. I've read a few you've written so much, I haven't even begun to tap to scratch the surface. But just a fascinating story that I was really attracted to when I started the Awakening program. You've amassed quite an impressive list of achievements, and we're going to dig into some of those as we go along. But you didn't start life this way. And when I was reading the Awakenings course, you talked about the time in your life when you were homeless. And because we kind of want to go through the entire kind of hero's journey arc on today's program, can you take us back to that time and give us the view from Joe's quote-unquote mundane world, the world before you heard the call to success?
That was a bleak time. I was homeless in Dallas in the late 70s, and I was in poverty for almost 10 years while I got in Houston. During that time, I deeply believed that I had some sort of mission or calling, and I was pursuing my writing career. But I was not in any way, shape, or form an overnight success. It was constant struggle, constant disappointment. In many ways, it had scarred me. I couldn't even go back to Dallas for decades because it was, in some sense, a traumatic experience. I can go back there now and have a great time, but for decades, I could not go back. That's how unpleasant it was. And so there was certainly the dark night of the soul that I went through for, I don't know, at least a decade and a half, as I continued to work on myself, pursue my dream, read the success literature, listen to the motivational, upbeat, positive thinking school, go to all the free lectures I can go to. But there is no overnight success in this story of Joe unless overnight is translated into about 30 years.
And guys, I want you to know that Joe doesn't know what I'm asking him today. All of these questions are completely on my screen, and he has no idea where I'm going. So he's shooting from the hip and giving us his just real, authentic, transparent, these are the answers to the questions that I'm throwing at him from out of the blue here. So he's being very transparent and very vulnerable in the hot seat, so to speak, as we go through this. At one point in the book, and you make a comment in the book about how you went to the library, and God bless the library, because if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have had all of the opportunities that you had. But at one point, you actually ask yourself in the book, how did that person become this person, the Joe that you are today? So I want to dig into that, because I'm sure that's what a lot of people are probably wondering. This wasn't just a bunch of lucky breaks, as you've alluded to. You put in decades of effort, energy, focus on what you call an awakening. Can you describe how you heard that call and eventually started on that journey of awakening for us?
Wow, what a great question. Well, the first thing to realize is that, like everybody else, I didn't really know what I was doing and didn't really know what I wanted to be. as a kid, I remember wanting to be a magician, wanting to be a detective, wanting to be an attorney, wanting to be an entertainer, wanting to be a boxer, wanting to be a baseball player, wanting to be a writer, there was a long list of things that I was playing with. And as I kept reflecting on it, and this is as a kid, before I was even a teenager and through the teenage years, I realized how much I loved books and that writing was something I truly enjoyed. And I played with the idea that maybe as an author, I could be all of those different characters. I could write novels or fictional stories about a magician or about a detective or about a lawyer or about a writer, whatever it happened to be. So I was deciding early on through the process of elimination and just basically guessing that I would probably do well as an author. And I began to pursue that. And again, that was not happening easily at all. This is way before the internet was even dreamed of. There was nothing like it. And so I was doing the traditional way of trying to get published. You write something, you put it in a manila envelope with a smaller manila envelope with stamps on it inside that. You send it to a publisher and you wait 6 weeks to 6 months before you get your response. And more often than not, it was rejection. And those rejections in those early years, they dropped me. It would take me weeks, if not months, to recover from it because I took it as a rejection of me personally. It took a long time for me to become aware that a rejection of my work was not a rejection of me. But I was so tied into my work being me that a rejection of it was a rejection of me. So you can see that there was a whole lot of work to be done. There was work to be done on my self-esteem, work to be done on my goal setting, work to be done on myself as an author. No real lucky breaks in any way that I can describe them. Nonstop persistence, constantly writing and trying and recovering and trying again and sending it out again. In doing that over and over and over again until slowly I would get an item published here or there. So that process of awakening came from a whole lot of self-reflection and a whole lot of pain. It was one of those things where I was reading a lot, and I was even reading metaphysics and psychology and philosophy when I was a teenager, and it caused me to reflect on my beliefs. One of the most powerful books I read was The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol. And it taught me that I could pretty much have what I wanted if I could truly believe it. And that was the wonderful magic wand, yet at the same time, it was also the thing that I couldn't get my head around. So this process of awakening was not a sudden thing. It's been a long journey. And even today, as I recreate myself as a musician and I keep daring something worthy at different levels of possibilities, I run into issues of belief. So I run into issues of self-esteem and worthiness and can I do it and the self-doubt. So I'm still working on myself today, just at a different level and in different areas. I'll take a break.
You've said, though, is so powerful because I have a friend who likes to say, you know, wherever you're standing in the world, you're pointing ahead of you and you're leading the way and you're looking at how far you've still got to go. But people behind you are pointing at you going, you know, that's where I got to go. And I've still got a long ways to go. So we always have this next evolution, this next iteration. And you said something that struck me and I kind of want to go back to it because I want to make sure that our listeners really grab this. The idea of it's not rejection of you, it's rejection of the product or the idea or the concept. We tend to, especially as entrepreneurs, put a lot of emotional investment into our babies, our things, our stuff that we put out into the world, when in reality, you know, sometimes we're just way ahead of our time and our idea is great. It's just not ready to be received. And instead, we see that as the ultimate rejection of ourselves. Mm. And what Joe is saying here, guys, is that we need to make that mental shift and we need to get some clarity around the fact that we can have lots of great ideas that may not be well received. That doesn't mean that we aren't well received or that there's something inherently defective in who we are and what we're doing in the world.
That's a beautiful insight. So I'm glad that you paused to focus on that. I look at business as a path of awakening itself. Being an entrepreneur is kind of a mission. And when you are on that mission, you're going out there into the wilderness to tell people about what you have or to offer what you have. And there's a lot of learning experiences that are self-growth opportunities. And one of those is having the separation between your business idea or your business and yourself. I had to learn that the hard way because my self-esteem or self-worth or self-love was so tightly wrapped up into whatever the article or story or poem that I had just written was. And so a rejection of it really felt like it hurt me. And now I can release products. And if it does well, wonderful, I celebrate, much like a detached, proud father or mother says, oh, my child did good. And if it doesn't do well, I'm detached and go, oh, okay, the public didn't really want that one. That's okay. Let me move on to the next one. There's a freedom there and an empowerment there, and it comes from realizing that you are separate from the results, you are separate from the business, and you are separate from the ideas. But that was, you know, I didn't learn that easily.
Right.
Hopefully everybody can learn it just on this call.
We can hope so. We can hope so, because that is one of the big – when we talk about the fears that we're dealing with as entrepreneurs – you know, and you said this, and it's something that I try to tell my clients, your business is not who you are. Your business is not what you are. Your business is an extension of how you present yourself into the world. And if you put all of your eggs into this is who I am, this thing that I do, when that thing is no longer viable or when that thing becomes rejected, then again, like you said, it becomes, you internalize it as a rejection of yourself. But one of the things that some people may know about you, Joe. Some people are going to know you as the hypnotic marketer. And I want to talk a little bit about what does that mean and how did you come to earn that reputation? Because I think that this is a fascinating study in branding yourself in business.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to recreate myself numerous times in my career. Early on, when I decided I wanted to be an author, I started writing books and articles and so forth. Along the way, I discovered copywriting, which is the ability to write words that sell. And I had to learn copywriting because that's how you sold products. And if I wrote a book, and my first book was in 1984, having it published was a cause for celebration, but it was also a cause for great disappointment because I quickly learned publishers know how to print books, but they don't know how to market books. So I began a self-study course to learn copywriting and to learn publicity and advertising. I fell in love with copywriting. It was a way that I could express myself in an engaging way, in a persuasive way, and of course I was focused on helping myself and later others sell books. Well, I began to get a reputation for that because my copy was so strong that it would get results over other people's copy or other people's attempt to sell things. As I kept looking at this, another part of my life was involved in hypnosis. I was doing hypnosis when I was 16 years old. I would hypnotize myself. I hypnotized a neighbor. He would hypnotize me. I was reading hypnosis books. So I had a long background with hypnosis, and I started to read a lot of the hypnotic literature, a lot of books on copywriting, and then I was also reading great literature. And it was the blend of all of these that caused me to come up with the term hypnotic writing, which is what I became known for. I was the first hypnotic writer, and the very first ebook I came out with was called Hypnotic Writing. And all of this is because I used my understanding of copywriting, which is a way to make a sale. I used my understanding of hypnosis, which is a way to hold people's attention. And I used my understanding of literature, because literature knows how to tell great stories and to get you to cry or to laugh or to feel something. The blend of all three of those is what I put into hypnotic writing and what I promoted as hypnotic writing. And that really hit a chord with people because that book became almost an overnight bestseller. It's still available today. It's in print now. It's a published book. You can get it Wiley and in bookstores or at Amazon, and I believe it's available for the Kindle. But this was one of my – maybe it was my very first brand – and it was long before I became known as a law of attraction guy, long before I wrote any of my spiritual books, long before I was in the movie The Secret. This started me out as an entrepreneur in a very, well, I say very, but mildly successful way, because I still had to work that up. I still had to get it out there. But hypnotic writing was a brand that resonated with the public, was authentic to me, and that match still lives with me today. Some people have been with me for a very long time because of that early hypnotic writing.
I love this. And for those of you listening, I want you to key in on some things that Joe identified. He took the things that he enjoyed, that he was passionate about, that he excelled in, the things that he was interested in. He combined them in a unique way, and he presented them in a marketable fashion to the marketplace, to an audience that craved what he was after. And when you guys are building your businesses, when you're trying to get out of that stuck entrepreneur space and you're putting yourself out there in the world, you have to have that specific way of doing things uniquely enough that people can remember you and recognize you. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on. But before we go there, I want to go back in time, like before you were born, Joe, way back in time, because one of the books you wrote I stumbled on while I was researching Bruce Barton, and I delighted in the parallels that you presented in The Seven Lost Secrets of Success. Now, here's this advertising guy, Bruce Barton, writing about Jesus in this whole new light, and yet you made the connection that everything he was revealing, he was also modeling in his own work. And we don't have time to hit all seven secrets, but because we're kind of on this theme now, can we talk about the first one, revealing the business that nobody knows? Because I think there's a crucial need in the entrepreneurial realm to understand and apply this secret now more than ever, especially, you know, since we're kind of right on this topic right now.
Well, first, I'm impressed you've done your research. you've done your homework. A lot of people who interview me haven't gone that far back. The Seven Lost Secrets of Success is one of my most beloved books. And I have to mention that when I started researching Bruce Barton, I didn't even know it would become a book when I started the research. I didn't know that it would become a product. All I knew was I was almost obsessed with understanding who this man was, because he was a household word in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. He co-founded one of the largest advertising agencies in the world. He did write best-selling books, including one about Jesus as a businessman called The Man Nobody Knows. Mm-hmm. I was fascinated. And I was pursuing my love, I was pursuing my passion, my enthusiasm, my interest, when I didn't have the money to do it, when I didn't have a name, a reputation that was out there, and solely because I was absolutely riveted by this man. Now, I did find those seven secrets because I did all the research on him and his methodology. And that first one, Reveal the Business Nobody Knows, is one of my favorites. It's really about telling the story of who you are, why you're in business, and why your product or service is different. Most people don't do it. Most people think, well, nobody's really interested, or they don't even think of the idea of sharing the story behind the scenes. I have a bit of a guitar collection here, and I love to know the story of the guitar, the luthier, the person who made it, where the wood came from. People who are interested in a particular product or service want to know the story behind it. But we entrepreneurs often erroneously make the mistake of thinking that the people aren't interested. Well, actually, it's the opposite. They are very interested if you can tell a story in an engaging way and reveal the business nobody knows. That's what you're really doing.
And I think that this is something, I think one of the reasons why we, as especially upstart entrepreneurs, avoid this, and I really think that's what it is, it's an aversion or an avoidance, is because, number one, we don't know how to tell good stories. Number two, we don't hold ourselves in a high enough sense of worth. Well, I'm just a copywriter, or I'm just a lipstick salesman, or I'm just a, you know, whatever. I just, and we put just in front of everything because we don't value ourselves enough. We don't value the work that we do enough. But I also think that we don't necessarily understand. I mean, you have done Hypnotic Marketer Man. You have done some amazing things. I saw your videos for the alien guitar, which I just thought was, I thought that was so genius. I mean, this is the 1915 harp guitar, correct?
No, the alien guitar is completely different. It's actually an alien guitar. It is from another planet, so to speak. And I am using hypnosis, curiosity, storytelling, entertainment, everything to draw attention to it. And I plan to reveal it on national television when somebody like David Letterman or Jay Leno, Jon Stewart, somebody along those lines invites me. And it's not the harp guitar at all. It's a completely different guitar.
Okay, see, and here's where I'm going to reveal my ignorance, because I had heard about the harp guitar, this beautiful 1915 Gibson guitar, which is gorgeous, and I had seen the links to the alien guitar and me, because I didn't do all my research, linked the two together in my mind, and I said, oh, it's got to be the same thing. And if it was, it would have been, and I'm sure wherever you're going with this, it's going to be equally brilliant. This would have been a brilliant marketing strategy because, you know, you're talking about this guitar that's so unusual and so remarkable and so different and so out there. And anybody who's seen the harp guitar knows that it is very different and out there. So I just naturally assumed I was behind the curve and you had already released this. And obviously I was wrong, and you've still got new, great, and exciting things out on the horizon to share. So that's
exciting. There's some entrepreneurial lessons here, though. I'm glad you're bringing this up. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, if anybody's curious about the 1915 Gibson harp guitar, they can go to healingmojomusic.com, and you'll see me holding it on the cover of my latest, or my first music CD. So that's healingmojomusic.com. And then the alien guitar is completely different in the sense that it's a marketing campaign to create curiosity, to drive people to the site, and the videos that are there are at myalienguitar.com, myalienguitar.com. And they can see they're all teasers. I never once show the alien guitar. I'm using a method from P.T. Barnum, who I'm in some respects a disciple of, and I wrote a book on him called There's a Customer Born Every Minute. And he was good at creating curiosity because he was trying to drive people to do something, and in his day it was to go see his shows, to go see the American Museum, which he created and made the Disney World of the 1800s. I have so many projects going on that it's real easy to have some confused with other ones. But the alien guitar is one thing, and the harp guitar is another one.
Okay. Well, my apologies for being erroneous there, but I'm glad we were able to tie that into this conversation because it is. I mean, if you go check out the website and see what he's doing with the alien guitar, it is brilliant. It is beyond brilliant the way he's got this, because I was like, I can't stop watching it. And I thought I already knew what it was at the end, and apparently I was wrong. So, I mean, just a great example to model. But you said P.T. Barnum, and this was actually where I was going next. Because Barton wasn't your only friend on the journey, so to speak. You seem to have a fascination with authors from the late 19th, early 20th century. And, you know, just off the top of my head, Barnum, I know Mark Twain caught your fancy. You actually have a collection of Twain memorabilia.
Right. Yeah.
How have these great minds, these what I call the friends for the journey, on the hero's journey, so to speak, how have they shaped your mindset and your perspective on the world and on business today?
What a juicy question. Thank you. I love that. First of all, I'm a bookaholic. I'm sitting in a library with thousands of books, and yet I have another office with thousands of books in it. And I consider the authors of these books to be my friends. And some of my best friends have come from the 1800s. The father of new thought and metaphysics is considered to be Phineas Parker Quimby. And I have his complete writings over here. I can see them. And, of course, P.T. Barnum wrote an autobiography, which when I read it, I felt like he was talking to me and he was alive to me. The ghost of Barnum is floating around watching over my shoulder all the time, and he will often whisper something in my ear like, do the alien guitar, but don't show it on video, on YouTube. And Mark Twain is the same way. I actually have a very rare self-caricature by Mark Twain. He did it of himself on copper plate. Just arrived a few days ago, and it's on my desk right now. He's looking right at me. He's listening to this phone call. And these guys and women, there's been many of them as well, they teach me and they instruct me. I think one of the problems that entrepreneurs have is that they try to solve all the problems they face by coming up with their own solution. And if they did some reading, they can find out that other people went through the same problems, and they already solved them. So if you read some of these books, and it doesn't have to be from the 1800s. For me, it just happens to be a period that, who knows, maybe in a past life I was hanging around with those guys. But it can be the modern authors today. I read the book Anything You Want by Derek Sivers, I think is his name, who founded CD Baby. And I don't know him. I haven't met him. But when I'm reading the book, I'm delighting in his personality, and I'm delighting in his information. And he's got principles in there that I'm listening to and being awakened by and going, oh, yeah, those are things to follow. Those are rules of thumb that will help me in business. So I'm constantly learning from authors of these wonderful books, many of which have passed on, and many are alive today. And, of course, luckily, and maybe ironically, I'm one of them. I'm writing books too. And the spirit of me through those books gets to touch people. I learn a lot from books, and I think it's one of the ways entrepreneurs can improve their business. Read more or listen to the books on audio, any of those kind of things. Absorb this stuff. That's what I've been doing with Barnum and Twain and Bruce Barton and a long line of other ones.
I feel like you're reading my mind because I want to go down that road in a second. But before I do, I want to go back to the story of how you ended up with the Mark Twain copper plate, because I read this morning.
Yes.
And this is kind of it's a divergence from the business angle that we're trying to go through on this program. But I find this story absolutely fascinating, and I think it we'll tie back into it when we talk about surrender later on in the program. So can you just tell the story of how you got this?
Yeah, and I think it is business related, because I think the principles I use to, we'll use the word attract this into my life, are the same principles you can use to attract more clients or more business or more sales or whatever it is that you're looking for as an entrepreneur. I think there's some parallel. The way I wrote about this, and I think you're referring to my most recent blog post.
Mm-hmm.
It's on my blog post. I called it a cool shortcut to the law of attraction, or cool law of attraction shortcut. In essence, I had stated to everybody that will listen, including what I call the universe, I'm talking to my unconscious mind, I'm talking to myself, I'm talking to family, friends, I collect Mark Twain. I have a very rare 1909 photograph of him that he held and he signed. And it's the kind of thing that was on the cover of a museum catalog. It's so rare and it's so wonderful. And I have it on my wall. He's looking at me, he's smoking a cigar, and he's asking me to ask him whatever I want. You know, I can have masterminds with the guy. So I put it out there that I'm looking for more Mark Twain stuff. The last week, and I forget if it was Wednesday or Thursday, a friend of mine who knows that sent me an email from an antique auction house saying that there was this very rare caricature by Mark Twain done by him on his 67th birthday at some sort of party, and it was done on copper plate, and it's very detailed, and it's got some lines by him under it where he wrote a little message and he signed it, and then there's another piece of parchment underneath that where he signed it to the person he gave it to. So all of that is there, and I thought, wow, I want that. I called the auction house to get it, credit card in hand. And as I was calling them, somebody else was finishing giving their credit card, and they bought it. And I thought, well, that was disappointing. I got my hopes up. And then I thought, well, it's okay. There's bound to be something else at Mark Twain's that'll show up, or maybe that item will show up down the road years from now. Or maybe at that party he did some other engravings and they'll show up. I just let it go. Then the very next day, the auction house, the antique store, called me back and said, well, the original deal fell through. Would you still like to have the Mark Twain engraving? And, of course, there was an immediate, very loud yes. And I gave my credit card, and I now own it, and it's now on my desk. And he's looking at me right now, and he says hello.
I love that. When I read that story this morning, I was just like, brilliant, brilliant, because we don't surrender to the process sometimes. And we're going to talk more about that in a minute. But you said, you know, you can have a mastermind with him. And I know that that's one of the concepts Napoleon Hill talks about.
Yes.
But one of the things I hear a lot lately is this concept of following after shiny objects and obeying these so-called gurus, essentially surrendering our own judgment and not listening to our inner voice anymore because we somehow think that everybody else has the magic pill. And we don't. And I remember, I think it was the Awakenings course, where you were talking about Emerson and some of those great authors who were very troubled, disturbed authors. And you said, I can idolize their results, but I don't have to model their lives.
And
can we talk about that?
Oh, that's an important one, so I'd be glad to talk about it. And actually, it wasn't Emerson. It was Jack London and Ernest Hemingway. And the self-destructive authors.
Yeah.
This is why I believe I was homeless and in poverty for so long, and this is really important for anybody listening to get. I was really struggling, and when I looked at why I was struggling, I thought it didn't make sense. I wasn't into drugs. I wasn't into alcohol. I wasn't doing that kind of self-abuse that causes a lot of people to become derelicts or become homeless. I was actually following a worthy cause. I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write things that made a difference. So why in the world would I be homeless? Why in the world would I be struggling in poverty? And as I reflected on this, part of the awakening that occurred for me is when I realized, I mean, this was a major wake up. This is where your eyes just pop open and your brain explodes because there's a whole shift of a paradigm. I realized that I was idolizing authors like Jack London and Ernest Hemingway, who had very unhappy, self-destructive lives. Both of them ended as suicides. Jack London didn't even make it to the age of 40. And I realized with this whiplash, I realized that I can model their writing styles, which I so love. They wrote classics of literature. But I didn't have to model their lifestyles, which were so horrible and self-destructive. When I separated the two, then I began to taste freedom. And then I thought, well, if you want to model authors, look around for authors who are still classics of literature, who are writing great material, but have healthy, happy, productive, prosperous lives. When I looked around and I found those people, you know, and there was Richard Armour was a poet, and I can't think of everybody. William Saroyan was another one that I admire. When I found them and I thought, oh, okay, these are some models. I can look at their writing and I can look at their lifestyles. My life began to change. So I was unconsciously patterning my life after self-destructive authors because I thought that was the curriculum. I thought that's what I had to do. So a whole lot of people, including the folks listening, may be modeling themselves after business people they admire, or they may be modeling themselves after people they grew up around. And they've got to look at that because beliefs are controlling us. Our self-image is controlling us, and it's all within our capability to change those things, but only once we're aware of them. When I changed it, life began to take on a bit more of a zippy happiness to it.
And this is something that when you said it, when I heard your voice utter those words, and again, when you just said it, it was like, oh my gosh, yes, you know, you feel the light bulb. You don't just see the light bulbs come on, you feel them come on, this electric pulsing through you because you recognize that's the piece that I've been missing. I've been watching from afar these so-called successful guru type people. Okay, I'm going to do what they did. I'm going to take their course and model what they did, and I'm going to, and you don't know what's on the other side of that life. You don't know that they're working 60 hours a week and their lives are miserable and they have no happiness. And you don't know that because they're wearing this pretty face. And so
Mark Twain said that the way he lived his life, when he smoked something like 30 cigars a day. He drank whiskey, he drank scotch, he played pool, he never exercised, he walked a lot, and of course he was a bitter man. He said if you followed his lifestyle, it would probably kill you. In fact, his words were, it would annihilate you. But it worked for him. And that's the whole point. You have to find what works for you. I keep telling people the only guru you want is the one inside of you. Yeah. You don't need an outer guru. You can take lessons from anybody. You can take them from a garbage man. It doesn't matter where those lessons come from. But you internally decide what's right for you, and it's more important to pay attention to your inner calling, your intuition, your sense of what's right for you than it is to listen to anybody else. You can hear them and weigh what they say, but you have to make the final decision about your life. You are the guru to your own life. That's what's important. And Mark Twain's looking at me and nodding. He's saying that's right.
Awesome. Okay, I want to shift gears a little bit because one of the points on the hero's journey is what I call the faith crisis or divine intervention. And this is the point where you've pretty much done all you can do on your own and the results don't quite seem to be getting it. It's where you kind of, you have to press on, but you also have to surrender to the process of attaining success. And I liken it to the distance between God's finger and Adam's finger in the mural on the Sistine Chapel.
I like that. So close
and yet so far. And you have written quite a bit about surrender, the power of letting go of specific outcomes to let the process or the divine step in and take you to the next step. Can we talk about just the surrender, the moment of surrender, the need to surrender, and the power and the freedom that comes from that?
Wow, that I love that question and that opportunity. I didn't always know about the power of surrender. I was the guy who wrote The Attractor Factor, and I was in the movie The Secret, and we know about me talking about the law of attraction and so forth. It's all over the internet. And that's kind of a type A behavior. That's kind of a almost an ego trying to manipulate, control, or at least influence the universe. And that's fine. In my book, The Awakening Course, and my audio program called The Awakening Course, the one you've referred to several times, mm-hmm. I say there's four stages of awakening. But I didn't know all those four stages when I wrote The Attractor Factor. I didn't even know all of them when I wrote the book Zero Limits. In Zero Limits, I said there's three stages. There's actually four. At some point, you can become an expert at the law of attraction and goal setting and the secret and all of that, but at some point, you're going to run up against something you cannot change. And usually it's something big, and it could be some sort of health problem. It could be a death in the family. It could be anything from, well, I'm in Texas, and right now we're going through a drought. And no matter how many times I beat the drum and I pray for rain, it has not rained. I don't seem to have control over the planet. So at some point, you wisely come to the conclusion that you have to surrender. And then you start to come to the idea, what are you surrendering to? Now, in The Awakening Course and in Zero Limits, I say surrender is of the utmost importance. Your life will become easier when you learn to surrender. You'll be more in the flow when you learn to surrender. You'll have more of what I call magic and miracles when you learn to surrender. And for me, I say you're surrendering to what I call the divine. Some people might call that God. I think even an atheist would admit that nature is something you could surrender to, that there is something you're part of, but it's bigger than you. So for me, trying to control the world, that's an ego trip. Mm. Putting your messages out there, your request out there, taking action, pursuing all of your dreams, doing what an entrepreneur would do, that's all wise. You're supposed to do that. But on the other end of this is you also have to let go of need, addiction, attachment to things working out a particular way. As long as that need and attachment and all that is there, you're going to be unhappy. It's going to feel like an uphill battle. You're always going to be fighting the elements. But if you keep pursuing your goal and you keep taking action and you have the spirit of detachment, the spirit of surrender to a process, if you will, now you can be much more relaxed. Now you can be more trusting. Now you can have faith. Now you can go with the flow. When I was homeless and in poverty, I didn't have those feelings, and that's why I was in misery. I never knew about surrender. All I knew about was misery because Joe was fighting the world. That's what Jack London and Ernest Hemingway taught me. They said, it's Joe against the planet. You will probably not win, but you can give a good try. Well, that's a horrible way to live. When it was Joe with the planet, which is more of what it is today, and Joe going with the flow, oh my goodness, now life is bliss. I live in an almost constant state of awe. I'm not fighting with reality. That's really the point. I'm not fighting with reality. I've learned to surrender while doing business.
I love that. And I'm going to get a smidge personal on you here because I was trying to do some research on you. And I know you have or had Steven Tyler's Roadster.
Oh, I still have it.
Yeah. Right. And I saw it was listed on eBay and you had set a limit on it. You're like, I will sell it for $100,000, and if it doesn't, I'll just keep it myself.
That's
and I
right.
thought that is such a classic example of this is the outcome I'm desiring, but I'm leaving it up to whether or not the world is going to take me up on the offer. And I thought, well, that's wonderful. And I know that I didn't think at the time that I saw the listing the car hadn't sold, but beautiful car. If anybody's looking for one, you guys need to go check it out because it's a really hot car.
It's a stunning car.
It is. It's a beautiful car. But again, just that example of here's what I'm asking for, and if it happens, great, and if it doesn't, no big deal, and I've got other things that I can do. And that's one of the things that really fascinates me about you, Joe, because you're so prolific, but you're not like cranking it out. It's here's the next thing, and here's the next thing, and I have this, and now I'm going to be a musician, and now I'm going to do that. And now, Dr. Joe Vitale, some 30 years after you began your journey, you've reinvented yourself multiple times. Author, movie star, musician, connoisseur of a fine country lifestyle with beautiful things. You've shared so much and given back in so many different ways. Take a moment and just compare the feelings of achievement today versus the feelings of that faith crisis, that moment before you surrendered. What's it like for you now?
Well, mentally, I've got this split screen going on in my head. It's like a it's a movie theater. There's a screen there, and there's two different films going, one on the left, one on the right. And the one from 30 years ago, that's an unhappy man. That's a lonely man. That's a struggling man. That's a hungry man. That's a very sad man. It's a guy with a vision who is really struggling and feeling beat up,
yeah.
Really feeling beat up and feeling hopeless, even suicidal. And there were moments of that where it was a real consideration. And that is so far away from the other image on the same screen, the me of today, that it feels like it's either fictional or a past life,
mm-hmm.
or it was a parallel universe. It is so dramatically different. But because today I am happy, I'm healthy, I am wealthy, I am at ease, I am at peace with the moment, myself, my surroundings. I thrill at being able to do what I do and being able to help others through what I do. I'm following my passions with great glee. Anything that I'm writing, it's because the compulsion, the divinity, the inspiration within me knocks at my door and says, this is for you to do next. And I just kind of salute and say, yes, sir, I'm doing it. I am at a place of peace and prosperity where the guy from 30-some years ago was at a place of pain and fear.
Do you think, and this is pure speculation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think if you kind of reflect, if someone had told you this is where you would be then, would you have believed them?
No. In fact, I wrote my book, Attract Money Now, for the Joe of 30 years ago. I wrote it thinking, well, there's people like Joe, that old Joe, that are wandering around right now. They're either on the streets or they're afraid of losing their home or their business or they have disability or they lost their insurance, whatever it happens to be. I wrote Attract Money Now, and I'm giving it away. It's at attractmoneynow.com to help all those people, including the Joe of 30 years ago. But to be honest with you, I think if I can go back in time and hand it to him, he would accept it. But he'd be saying, where's the $5 so I can go buy something to eat? You know, or where can I get my roof over my head? The focus would be on survival. And I think that messages from the future wouldn't get through. That's what I would speculate.
I think that's powerful. I think a lot of us get focused on survival and we miss the opportunities that are right in front of us. So I think that's...
Oh, that's so true.
That's key. Now, you mentioned Attract Money Now, and I have a few more questions before we wrap up, but
sure.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about it and where you think you said attractmoneynow.com. Just tell us a little bit more about it so that people can go check you out if they're interested in learning more.
Yeah, I have been hearing from people who did lose their job or were about to or were on disability insurance and lost it or any number of things that sounded pretty sad. And so I thought, well, I know a 7-step formula that's helped me over the decades. And I wrote Attract Money Now, which is the 7-step formula on how to bring money into your life. And one of the key steps is thinking like an entrepreneur. That's actually one of the 7 steps in the program. And then I thought, I'll give away the book to take away anybody's excuses for not actually reading it. So when people write to me and they say they're having these problems, I say, go to www.attractmoneynow.com. Get the digital book, read it, and do it. I can't read it for them, and I can't do it for them, but I wrote the book for them, and I'm giving it away for them. I also made a hardcover copy of it if somebody wanted to buy it, and I give them a free DVD of one of my presentations, and that's at attractmoneynowbook.com. But the whole point is to inspire people not just with feel-good information, but with actual practical go in the streets and do these 7 steps. I can't go through all 7 steps now, but one of them is about thinking like an entrepreneur. When I started to think like an entrepreneur, I could see opportunities everywhere. When I was on Donny Deutsch's TV show, The Big Idea, which was one of the big highlights of my life, I loved that show, and it was a highlight to meet him and be on that show. He was always telling people, whenever you state a complaint or you hear somebody state a complaint, your ears should pick up because that is a product or service opportunity. And that's how an entrepreneur thinks. They think of opportunities. They're listening for opportunities. Most people, including myself before I learned how to do this, it never even occurred to them to do it. We'd look at a new product or service and say, oh, that's a great idea. I wonder how they thought of it. Well, think like an entrepreneur, and you can come up with those. So Attract Money Now is a seven-step formula that's guaranteed to work as long as you read the book and actually do the steps. And again, the book's free, attractmoneynow.com.
I love coming to this point in this program and you having this free give, because one of the things that we talk about in the Hero's Arc is that it's really not an arc, it's a cycle, it's a circle.
Yes.
And we always have that return and we have that give back and that thing that we do. And this is so clearly an example of giving back in a very, you know, open-handed, here it is kind of a way. I love that. AttractMoneyNow.com. Okay, couple last questions for you. First,
sure.
As a sought-after coach, a mentor, a speaker, you know, you're a charismatic spiritual guy. You've seen a lot of people through the faith crisis in their lives. What are some of the key behaviors that you see time and again that prevent these people or slow these people down from breaking through and having that awakening, as you call it?
Wow. Okay, off the top of my head, the number one thing I see people doing wrong is not taking action. That is the colossal big elephant in the room that these people don't even talk about. And since we're being so open here, I will confess there is an Attract Money Now group on Facebook, and it's a group of people. There's like 2,000 of them, and they are supposedly reading the book. And it absolutely frustrates me to go in there and see that all they're doing is posting feel-good messages to each other. Occasionally I'll go in there and say, okay, who has worked step one in Attract Money Now? And nobody will reply. Or I'll say, who is working on step three in Attract Money Now? And nobody will reply. This is the number one thing I see people, entrepreneurs, law of attraction people, secret, whatever you want to call them, they're not doing. They sit and wait for things to happen. They sit and meditate. They sit and visualize. They sit and intend. They sit and read or sit and listen. Those are all wonderful. That's all part of the formula. But at some point, you actually have to do something. The reason that I've been so prolific, and I think I have 54 books out there, and I got three other ones that I'm playing with right now, is when an idea comes to me, I don't question it, I don't doubt it, I don't walk around and go, oh, I wonder if that'll work or not, and I don't put it aside for 6 months or 6 years. I usually start on it pretty close to the moment the idea came to me. Why do I do that? One is it's an acknowledgement of the idea. It's my statement of gratitude to the universe or my creative unconscious, wherever the idea came from. I'm saying thank you by taking action. But there's another reason to do it. When an idea comes to me or anybody, there's a rush of excitement that comes with the idea. That is an energy you can use to manifest the idea. When I get excited, and the Bruce Barton book, The Seven Laws of Secrets of Success, is a great example. I got the idea to start pursuing him, and again, I didn't know it would end up being a book, but as I pursued it, it started to evolve into a book. I started to write it. I didn't question who has got to publish it, is this going to be any good, where am I going to get the money, what's going to come of this, is this will be a success, will this be a I didn't do any of that. I wrote the book, and that book became so successful, and the first edition of it, one reader bought 19,500 copies. Woo. Of it. For everybody that was in the company they were in. It was some multi-level company back in Houston a long time ago. And that book's still in print, and that book's gone through, I don't know, 20-some editions. But I had to take action. So that's the number one thing I would see, is most people don't take action. The other one is they're doubting themselves and their business. And they've got to fortify themselves about themselves, and they have to be working in a business that they love. Meaning that you love your product or service for whatever number of reasons. Because if you don't love your product or service, what are you doing trying to push it on somebody else? That's going to feel like work to you. You are not going to like it. You are not going to enjoy it. And the people you're trying to reach are going to feel your distaste for the product or service. So it's very important that you love yourself, appreciate yourself. But as entrepreneurs, we also have to love the product or service. Those are a couple things that just, you know, storm into my mind because of your question.
Sure, sure. Okay, final question. And this has just been absolutely thrilling for me. And I want to make sure that I get that out on the record because this has been an amazing, I've been waiting for this, chomping at the bit, and I have to give major thanks to Mark Joyner for making this happen because
he's a great guy.
He is a great guy. And this is such a wonderful way to tie all of the fears and all of the confusions together and let people see there's an arc that happens here. And it doesn't matter where you're at. If you keep persisting, things are going to come through for you. Just, you know, and you just have such a great life example. But final question, which action heroes or superheroes do you most identify with and why?
Whoa. you mean like comic book heroes or any
heroes? Sure, any action hero, superhero, mythic hero. We're all about business action heroes here, so that's a question I try to ask everybody, at least, you know, where you're at on that.
Wow, what a great question. Okay, well, top of my head here, I feel like I'm doing psychoanalysis and you're Freud, and I'm going to just kind of free associate. But as a comic book hero, Flash was always my favorite. And Flash was the one who had the ability to speed around the planet in seconds. I always thought that'd be pretty useful. I have fast cars, so I'm probably getting close to being the Flash, but I can't do it physically. And then when it comes to other heroes, I'm a big fan of Steve Reeves, who was the original Hercules in the movies. And he was a famous bodybuilder during the classic physique days, which was before steroids and all of the things that turn the bodybuilders into mutants today.
Yeah.
And I am a collector of Steve Reeves. I have his car. I have his gym. I have some of the things that he was awarded. And I think of his self-discipline. I think of his ability to intend what he wanted for his life, whether it was in the financial world, because he was more than an actor and a bodybuilder. He was very successful in business, ran his own ranch. He did very well at it. So I saw him as a well-rounded, balanced, healthy individual. So he comes to mind, and probably after I get off the phone, I'll think of all these other ones I could have said, but I'll go with the Flash and Steve Reeves for right now.
Super, super. Joe, this has been an absolute delight, really and truly, and I appreciate you taking the time to open up and share so freely about your personal journey and provide such helpful insight to our listeners as well as myself today. It's absolutely been a blessing. Any last words before we close the call and give your URL one more time?
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you for doing this. I'm very impressed with you. As you noted, I didn't see any questions. You and I had never spoken before. I didn't know what I was getting into here. I agreed to it because of Mark Joyner, who was the person who released Hypnotic Writing as my first ebook long, long ago. So I owe him a lot, and I count him as a dear friend. And I want to also thank all of your people being on the call. I want them to go for their dreams. It's really important to follow your passion. The question I usually get asked is, how'd you go from homeless to multimillionaire celebrity type thing? And it used to frustrate me when I would hear it until I realized they're all looking for a magic pill. They want to know the one thing I did or the one book I read or the one seminar I went to. And then I realized, well, there is an answer. The one thing I did to become a success is follow my passion. And that's what I encourage everybody to do. Tune in and follow your passion. Let passion direct the way. So Godspeed to everybody listening, and thank you again.
Oh, Joe, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Guys, that is going to wrap it up for us now. Remember, you can connect with Joe, pick up a copy of any one of his transformational books at MrFire.com. That's MrFire.com. Or go and pick up his free ebook at attractmoneynow.com. You guys will get a lot out of it if you haven't already gotten a lot out of today's interview. Until next time, this is Lisa Robin Young signing off. Be the action hero of your business and enjoy the journey, everybody.